Yeah!
I'd be curious how many of our big Yankee offseason ideas actually happen. I'll make you this prediction. My idea of Alex Bregman, Tiki's idea of Alex Bregman, while we both may like it, and I will defend it against anyone who disagrees, it's also not going to happen. Mm-hmm. Like, one thing I know about Brian Cashman is that they love them Anthony Volpe. Mm. And so the truth is, as much as I want them to get off the Volpe drug by bringing somebody in, whether it's Alex Bregman, who's not really a shortstop, but could at least play the position.
Well, see, my plan has him not off the Volpe drug.
That's true, but it has them off of the Ryan McMahon drug, and he's making $16 million a year to play third base. So I don't think it's going to happen, but when I look at the Yankee roster, and I look at their near-ready prospects, not the prospects that may be here 2 years from now, Jason Dominguez isn't a prospect anymore, but he deserves that opportunity that he didn't fully get this past season. Spencer Jones is a readied prospect. It's all in the outfield. And so I feel less of an urgency to spend big finances on an outfielder when I have more questions about the infield. I did think about trading Jazz Chisholm, but I like Jazz. I do. And I think he's a good Yankee. And I wonder, okay, if I trade him, what am I getting?
Yeah. And who's playing second base then? You're trading for a second baseman?
It creates a brand new hole.
100%. So, or that could be Volpe's landing spot.
It could be. I mean, that's the key about Anthony Volpe. The Yankees need to view him differently this season as a guy who can be an everyday player, but maybe at different positions. I mean, there are guys who make successful careers out of that.
Right.
But the one thing I think most people agree about the Yankees is you want more grinders in their lineup. Mm. And Alex Bregman is a star, but he's also a grinder. They also have questions about the pitching, which is why I brought up signing a guy like Michael King, who can not only solidify your rotation, because there are questions at the beginning of the year due to health, but also be a damn good weapon come October if you tell Michael King, I'm moving you to the bullpen.
Right.
In fact, I have to admit, we'll do our Met plans later. Some of the players I suggested for the Yankees, I've also suggested for the Mets. So we may be competing for the same guy.
You didn't make them mutually exclusive?
No, because I go after both guys.
Okay.
Like, we're two franchises that happen to both play in New York, but I may target the same player. I mean, last year they both targeted Juan Soto. And when we talked about the Yankees, didn't we say the Yankees should sign Juan Soto? And then when we talked about the Mets, we said the Mets should sign Juan Soto?
Right.
We didn't say, well, no, I already said the Yankees should sign Juan Soto, so the Mets have to take a seat. No, I mean, you both wanted them, but only one ends up with them. And one thing I do find interesting is Cody Bellinger's name is listed all over the Mets as a fit. I was reading betting odds earlier today, like the betting odds of where players will go.
To play where?
Well, possibly to play first base to replace Pete Alonso, or possibly to play center field since they don't actually have a major league proven center fielder, at least an everyday player. So that could very well be a player that the two teams are competing for. You know, not to the level of Juan Soto, but it's certainly on the table. Let's get to your calls, 888-808-1019. Gabe is in Wayne, New Jersey. What's up, Gabe?
Oh, guys, it's only been a couple of days. I'm glad we're talking off season already.
Yeah.
So look, I think that this is the offseason that the Yankees need to capitalize on the talent that they often sit on and realize they should have moved them when it's already too late. Right. So I'm thinking about a couple of guys here. Number one, Ben Rice. I know it's crazy, but everybody has been drooling all over this guy's baseball savant page, right? Like, oh my God, his exit velocity, all this kind of stuff. He's a platoon guy. If there's another team out there that values him as highly as all of the red on his savant page, Then move him for like one of the guys that you guys are talking about. My three big moves, it's a free agent and two trades. It's Cody Bellinger because of the flexibility, if nothing else, and the splits against left-handed pitching. All right. And then the trades are Ketel Marte at second base because the dude is a dog, another grinder with a high OPS, high on base percentage, yada, yada, yada. And he hits well in the postseason, granted in the limited sample size. And then the third one is trade for a pitcher. I don't care if it's Alcantara, Freddie Peralta, Joe Ryan, whoever the case may be. You guys have Spencer Jones who's turning 25. You guys got Jason Dominguez who you don't know what to do with every single season, it seems like. There's guys that have value that are just turning basically into spoiled milk year after year that the Yankees can capitalize on right now. So I think this is the offseason for trades, mainly for the Yankees, because there's not really that big splash player that they're going to pursue. I agree they're not going to go after Bregman, even though they should. They're not going to go after Tucker because the price tag is going to be too high. But there are trades that make this team drastically better and change the philosophy on the hitting side.
So you mentioned Ben Rice. This jumps out at me because he says Ben Rice, who has a lot of value. He is right about that, and we've heard that teams were asking so much for Ben Rice. And Tiki views Ben Rice as a guy who can DH, maybe right. catch a little bit, play a little first base. To me, the answer with Ben Rice is he's the first baseman. Like, I think that this man needs a position. Instead of being jerked all over the place, it's just, you are the first baseman. Get your first baseman's glove. Become good at the position. He was not good at the position last year.
No,
but wasn't. I'm not giving up on him. Like, if you play the position enough, I think you can be good at him. Or at that position.
Right.
But here's my trade with Ben Rice. Tell me if you'd make it. Because I think this lines up. What I try to do with trades is I try to find, like, okay, let me get a comp on it. The Milwaukee Brewers traded Corbin Burns, and what did they get back? They got back Joey Ortiz right. and D.L. Hall for a guy who was a rental. And Corbin Burns had a much higher resume right. than Freddie Peralta. Would you trade Ben Rice and, let's say, a lower-level minor league prospect for Freddie Peralta, who has 1 year left on his deal? He makes very little money, so yeah. from a financial standpoint, it is a damn steal. You've now solidified. Your rotation's already loaded. It got even better.
Right.
And it doesn't even cost you that much money. Hmm. The problem is, it's a rental because he's a free agent at the end of the year, and the odds are you're not going to pay him.
I don't think I could do that because you already have Freed. You already have Garrett Cole, even though he's only got a few years left, a couple years left on that deal. Cam Schlittler's there. Carlos Rodon's got a deal. Like, it just doesn't make sense to add another starting pitcher.
Never have enough pitching, Teague.
That you have to pay. If you don't have to pay him, if it's just if he's got 3 years or he's in arbitration still, great. But he's got a year left. He's only making $8 million next year. So you're right. It's palatable. But it doesn't make sense given the financial expenditures already in the starting rotation.
Yeah.
Especially when there likely is going to be a big need in your bullpen.
Yeah.
Not closer, because Bednar's a guy, even Williams, whatever, he is what he is. And a pretty good setup, man, at least down the stretch for the Yankees. But you're going to need bullpen help.
Well, let me ask you this question. You know, we talk about lessons from the World Series, lessons from teams that win a World Series. When you try to really pinpoint the Dodgers' success, instead of just making fun of their deferred money and how many all-stars they have, wasn't it the depth of their starting pitching? Wasn't it their ability to even take starting pitchers like Roki Sasaki and less successfully, Clayton Kershaw, and move them to the bullpen?
Mm-hmm.
So if the Yankees, let's say, did make a trade for Freddie Peralta, or in the case of you guys, traded for Sandy Alcantara, and now they've got all these guys, first of all, keeping them healthy is a chore. And if somehow they are all healthy come October, you get to use them out of the bullpen.
True.
And isn't that a better answer than signing a two-bit reliever who's probably not that good?
Yeah, the problem with using the Dodgers as the example is that the Dodgers were hurt all season long, and just kind of got lucky at the right time.
Yeah, guys got healthy at the right time. I mean, that's the risk you run into. But look at the Yankees. You already know Garrett Cole's coming off Tommy John, which means, is he going to be ready for opening day? Let's just assume, being cautious, no.
Yeah.
Carlos Rodon is not going to be ready for opening day. Mm-hmm. Clark Schmidt is not going to be ready till the second half of the year. There is a scenario where all of the health hits at the right time, and the answers to your bullpen questions may come from that depth. Which is why you never have enough starting pitching, as the cliche goes.
I'm not denying what you're saying. There's just a sense of irony when you go back a year earlier and look at the fact that the Dodgers had no starting pitching at all, won the World Series, and the Yankees tried to do that in Game 1 with Nestor Cortez, and it's the reason they lost the series.
Yes. What would you rather have?
No, I agree.
Won two World Series. Which way would you feel more comfortable trying to do it?
Ultimately, you got to have the pitching.
I agree. I'm just... I think you look at the Dodgers, just did it two different ways. That's all I'm saying.
Ah, listen, that shows you there's many...
It's because of the Dodgers.
Right.
There's many ways you can win a championship, that's for sure. John and Massbeth, what's up, John?
How's it going, fellas? So I got my own Yankee prediction here. And we got three blockbuster acquisitions.
Wow.
One is a trade.
Yeah.
Actually, two are trades. It was a free agent signing, and the three of them are going to combine for about $65 million in salary. But first, I'll start with the small moves.
Yes.
Catcher, Danny Jansen, a right-handed hitter.
All right.
We're going to sign him.
Yeah.
We're going to sign two starters because we're going to need them. Nick Martinez and Steven Matz.
All right. You're going a little depthy, which I like. All right. What else you got?
Well, we don't need them to start in the playoffs because we got Cole, Freed, Rodon, and Schlittler.
No,
we
don't need. No, you want to you
acquire
absolutely,
someone big.
You want depth, and Nick Martinez has pitched out of the bullpen plenty, so he makes a lot of sense. Keep going.
Now we're going to address first base because we're going to do something with that. We're going to get Luis Arraez, 2 year, $26 million deal. Now we're going to trade for P. Fairbanks, we're gonna put him in the bullpen.
All right.
And now we're gonna do the big free agent signing. We're gonna get Tucker 10 years, $400 million. Right. Do it. Now two big trades.
Yes.
Two big trades now. Because Tiki, we know rookies suck. When it comes to Yankees baseball, prospects suck. All right,
let's
one, we're going to call up the Angels. The Angels cannot develop starting pitching. They had a whole entire draft a few years ago where they drafted all pitchers and they all suck. So they need pitching. And you know what? We're going to give them Luis Gil. And we're going to give them two of our top prospects. Our number five prospect is Ben Hess. Number six prospect in Bryce Cunningham. And we're going to give them a little bat to be excited about in Jason Dominguez. And give us Zach Neto to play shortstop.
Wow.
Anthony Volpe, enjoy the bench.
I like
that. And now the blockbuster trade that no one's thinking about.
All right.
There is a team out there. Listen, there is a team out there that doesn't really have a big, you know, it's a small market team kind of, that has four long-term contracts on the books until 2033. Manny Machado is making $40 million a year till he's 40 years old. Nobody wants that. Xander Bogaerts is making $25 million till he's 40 years old. Nobody wants that. The Padres might want to shed some payroll. And you know what? Fernando Tatis Jr. Let's give them Will Warren. Let's give them Ben Rice. Let's give them George Lombard. Let's give them Spencer Jones. Let's give them anyone else in the damn farm system they want. Let's get that outfield of Judge, Tucker, and Tatis with Zach Neto out there, with Cole, Freed, Rodon, and Schindler on the mound in the playoffs. Who's going to touch that, baby? Who? Come get them. You want it? Come and get it. Let's go.
All right, John. That was a hell of a plan.
That was a hell of a buildup.
I mean, he built it up so beautifully because he started with the small stuff.
Delivery was as impressive as the plan.
Yeah. I mean, he's walking away with Kyle Tucker, Luis Arraez, Zach Neto to finally solve the Anthony Volpe issue, and Fernando Tatis Jr. Mm. And he added depth starting pitchers like Steven Matz and Nick Martinez. No biggie, but it gets you through the 162.
Yep.
I got to tell you, I think he sold me. I don't know how realistic all that stuff is, but that was fun.
That was great, but I will say John is losing his fastball. I thought the end was going to be, and there's a team that couldn't pay for their first base coach. They need to clear up some salary. Juan Soto's getting traded back to the Yankees. I thought that was even setting up for a troll.
Because John and Maspeth.
That was legit.
Who sometimes does troll the Mets and Juan Soto is taking today very seriously.
He is.
If we took time out to create our Yankee plan, John wasn't going to call up and make a mockery of it.
Right.
I mean, he didn't mention any Mets. I thought he was going to say, we're going to steal Edwin Diaz, or we're going to steal Pete Alonso, or we're going to, as you said, jokingly trade for Juan Soto. He came out and said, this is how we become great.
That is how you become great. The question is it doable?
I mean, a lot of that. Well, first of all, 10 years, $400 million for Kyle Tucker, that's probably going to be the nature of the contract.
Yeah.
I think he underperformed Arraez's deal. He said 2 years, $36 million. It probably will cost a little bit more, but sure. I don't know about San Diego. The Padres are very intriguing because they've given out so many monster contracts. But they have moved some of them.
Yeah, but I don't think they want to go reset again.
Well, I don't think they would reset because they still have Manny Machado. They still have Xander Bogaerts. And
Tatis.
Well, but they'd be trading Tatis, at least in the case of this discussion.
No, but I'm just saying in general, talking about San Diego, absent all of the John fantasy world, is I don't think they have a good team.
Yeah.
So, and they're not horribly far away.
No, they're close. They're close every single year.
100%. So why would you break that down just to get shed salary? It doesn't make sense.
Well, because I think that they may have spent more than they actually had. You know, they gave out a lot of massive contracts, and it may be above what they can sustain. Plus, with Tatis Jr., there's a worry factor. He's already been busted for PEDs.
Yeah.
He's a little crazy. Who knows what's going on in that locker room?
You need a little crazy sometimes.
And that's why I would trade for him if I'm the Yankees or the Mets, by the way. Like, that doesn't scare me off. I'm just trying to answer why San Diego would ever entertain something like that. But good idea by John. That was not bad. Let's go to, we've talked a lot of football today as well, so we mix in a football call with Mike in Manhattan. What's up, Mike?
What's up, boys? How are we?
What's good.
Want to give the Colts perspective, but first off, Evan, you're in the pumpkin club now with Sean after all the slander this week on the Colts. That's right. You need them to lose.
I need them to lose. It benefits my team if they lose. You can't blame me anymore. Screw the Colts, ladies and gentlemen.
No, I'm just busting your chops. I understand. I mean, you know, everybody in like social media and everything like that, they want to say like, who's the winner of the trade? And at the end of the day, like, you make the trade because it's good for both sides. Mm-hmm. That's the way they look at it. And I truly believe that the Colts had a hole in the cornerback position. They filled that. And, you know, they'd probably be drafting a guy in the first round anyway this year that could be a lottery pick. And they're in win-now mode. Their team is aging on both sides of the ball. So over the next couple of years, you know, they have to focus on who they got in the locker room. And I think for the Jets side, like, they need leadership more than anything. And, like, these guys who are their star players are not proving to be the leaders in the locker room. And you now give the opportunity for somebody new or on the team to step up and be that person. And that's something that really, like, they can improve on that and give really the coach the opportunity to kind of establish what he is looking to build around and the culture that he wants.
Yeah.
So I think that it's really a win-win on both sides.
That's a good way to put it, Mike, because I feel like anytime a new coach comes, you're going to need your evangelist to come from somewhere. And sometimes it's just built in. They're just there already, and they buy in just because you're their head coach. They're not looking for you to – the head coach to win you over. You know what I mean? So I think Aaron Glenn needs his guys, just like Dave needs his guys. There's a conversation we had on Monday. I don't think he has those guys.
It's crazy to think about this, but, you know, I've been here a long enough time where there's a lot of points of reference where I can say, yeah, when they did this, I thought this. Mm-hmm. When they did that, I thought that. So I'm thinking about what he said about Indianapolis, and I'm thinking about myself. How would I feel if I had a football team where I have a quarterback, still kind of unsure about him, but he's playing well. My team is 7-2, and I feel like the opportunity is right there. Would I be gung-ho about trading two number ones for a cornerback like Sauce Gardner? And what's so depressing is I don't think I've honestly had that opportunity to give that opinion on WFAN in the 18 years I've been here, because when has that ever been the Jets? Yeah. And that's kind of a depressing thing to say. So I'm going to pretend as if I was rooting for a football team that was that good. I would not be scared at all to trade first-round picks. Are you kidding me?
Right.
I'm trying to win a championship. I'm trying to win a Super Bowl.
Right.
If, God forbid, let's hope, 5 years from now, the Jets are close, and, like, legitimately close, like, they're 8-2, they're right there, I would not be afraid of trading first-round picks. Right. I would not be like, oh, I can't do it. It may blow up. I'm trying to win. I'm trying to go for the gusto.
Yeah.
So if I'm a Colts fan, I think the Cowboys are very different. We haven't given their perspective. I think that's stupid for a different reason. But I think in the Colts case, I'd be gung-ho. Yeah, I'd be very excited upon making that trade.
You got to go back to the Peyton Manning era, last time they won a Super Bowl, which was 41.
It was your last year in the league, Tiki.
So, Super Bowl, 2007. So it just, sixth season, 2007 Super Bowl. It just feels like they haven't been relevant in a long time, except for the Andrew Luck thing, but that feels like it came and went so quickly.
Yeah.
And they were good.
They got to a championship game.
The Deflategate. That's the only one they made, right?
Right.
Yeah, they actually have a banner that says AFC Championship Game finalist.
What year was that? 14? 13?
Man, that is such a weird era of football. I've already forgotten what year that is.
I know. But either way, it's over a decade ago. And so for a proud Colts franchise, you got to try to win when you have the opportunity.
Absolutely.
And right now they have the offense, maybe the defense, or middle of the road defense, but they have the team to try to run a championship.
2014 season, obviously January 15th.
You got to take risks in life, and when you're close. Now, look, ultimately, do I think the Indianapolis Colts are going to win a Super Bowl? Probably not. I think most people would agree, but it doesn't mean you don't try. Especially these two picks. Unlike the NBA, like, you trade all your NBA picks. You may trade a pick 5 years from now. And 5 years from now, who knows where you are? You're in the lottery. It can alter your franchise forever. The Colts traded first-round picks this year and next year. Well, we already know this year they're good, so it's a late first-round pick.
Yeah.
And next year, you hope they're good. And after that, the deal's done in terms of the draft capital that you gave up.
Right.
Let's go to Mike in New Jersey. What's up, Mike?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good, man. What's up?
So I just wanted to talk a bit about, you know, your Yankees, you know, suggestions. Firstly, I wanted to talk about Bregman. I feel like, you know, I don't want Bregman on the Yankees, not because of the Astros stuff. I mean, obviously, he's an amazing player. There's one thing I think that a lot of people don't mention is that he's played his entire career with the Crawford Boxes in Houston or the Green Monster in Fenway. Mm-hmm. And he's a very pull-happy right-handed hitter. And those are the two shortest left fields in the game. So that produces a lot of extra homers, a lot of extra doubles with the tall wall. Yankee Stadium is one of the longest left fields and the longest left center in the league. So I feel like he would, you know, obviously be successful, an amazing player, but I don't know if he'd be as worth it just because of the dimensions of the field as a pull-happy right-handed hitter. So that's one reason I would be off on Bregman.
His power numbers would absolutely go down. I was looking at
him as a home run masher.
Well, that's the point. Like, he's not a 40 home run guy. I know he did that 1 year.
Right.
So, yeah. Look, I acknowledge, and I was looking at his Baseball Savant page to see. I've told you about the expected home runs by park.
Yeah.
We did that last year. I forget what the player we were talking about. Oh, it was Cal Raleigh when we were making the case against Cal Raleigh for Aaron Judge. So there's no doubt that he loses home runs playing at Yankee Stadium. But it's not as dramatic as you think.
Mm-hmm.
And also, to your point, he's not a slugger where that's his game.
Right.
He puts the bat on the ball, which he does at a pretty good percentage. I think he only strikes out, I think it's about 12% of the time, which is very low. Very, very low.
Yeah, what did he have, 70 last year?
He walks.
Something like that.
A lot.
Yeah, 70 strikeouts he had all last season.
He plays great defense. Mm-hmm. And again, a part of this contract is he'll go back to third base. I think he can handle the position of shortstop on a temporary basis or as long as they need him to. And from an aging perspective, I don't think he's aging. Like, he's 32 years old, but I look at his production last year with Boston and even the last couple of years, I don't see a guy that's dipping.
Hmm.
So I'm just not as concerned about all those things.
Yeah, I'm not worried about, you know, the left field fence. And I know it gets made a big deal about Yankee Stadium, how it's a short porch out there and right, but left field is not that much longer. It's not that much deeper. Left center is, but, I mean, I feel like he's a good enough player that he would adjust his game. That's what really good players do.
Yeah. It doesn't scare me as much as the stereotype of him actually does.
Right.
We will unveil our Mets offseason plan coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. We'll get back to your calls in a minute, 888-808-1019. But today, we heard from the players that were traded and the players that were not traded. And one guy I was very curious to hear from is Breece Hall.
Right.
Because it sounded as if Breece Hall really wanted to get traded.
Yeah, he sounded like he was trying to push himself out the door.
Yeah, he even tweeted and then deleted a tweet, and who knows what Breece Hall actually wanted. The reporting from yesterday is that there was a fourth-round pick on the table, and the Jets insisted it be a third-round pick, and there was no budging. And so the Jets said, nope, we're not going to trade him. And so Breece Hall remains a New York Jet. So let's hear from Breece Hall. First off, did you want to be traded? Like, that's the first thing I'd want to know from Breece Hall. Did you want to be traded, Breece Hall?
This is a good chance to set the record straight, though. Would you have welcomed a trade?
I mean, I don't think it's up to a player to be traded. It's not really.
Some guys do.
It's not really. Yeah, but it's not really like, you know, I think in my situation, it was, you know, if I was going to be traded, it was going to be whether I wanted to be or not.
Yeah.
So,
were you hoping to be?
Nah, it's just, like I said, if it was going to happen, it was going to happen whether I wanted it to or not. So it was one of those things where I was like, I mean, I can't control what's going to go on. It's going to be what it's going to be. So I just got to be where my feet are and, you know, take it with a grain of salt, whatever happens.
How do you take that?
Yeah, it feels like he's trying to speak the right line without saying anything.
Yes.
And I look, he's on the Jets. It is what it is. He didn't get traded, so he can't say, I wish I was traded, because then all of a sudden you're a bad teammate and you undercut your chances of getting a long-term deal. So he kind of had to say exactly what he said. It's not up to me. I'm here doing my job the best I can. That's all he can do.
Even when Quinnen Williams demanded a trade reportedly three different times, it was never up to him. It was up to the Jets, and the Jets finally decided, okay, we'll do it now. Look at the offer we're getting back, or we're willing because of where we are as a franchise.
Right.
So it's never up to the player, but it doesn't stop the player from asking. It doesn't stop the player from saying, please trade me. But the other thing I want to know from Breece Hall, because this is my attitude as a Jet fan, is, okay, if you didn't trade him for a fourth-round pick, do you plan on keeping him if you're the New York Jets?
Yeah.
And then it leads to, hey, Breece, even though you may not have a say in this because of the franchise tag, would you want to stay as a member of the New York Jets? Let's hear how he handled that kind of question.
You want to be here next year?
You said what?
You want to be here next year?
If they'll have me, yeah.
Oh, so have there been any talks about
it? No talks. Like I said, I'm focused on balling on Sundays and letting the rest of it take care of itself.
How about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's it's slightly passive aggressive. Do you want to be here if they'll have me?
Because they haven't really made him an offer.
They haven't made an offer. We haven't had any talks at all. And so it doesn't matter what I want. I can't give myself a contract. So that was another good answer.
It makes sense. And there's a lot of time between now and the free agent period. It's going to make a lot of sense to franchise tag him. Just because they're going to have so much cap space. So tagging him, no biggie. You're going to probably have a young quarterback. I mean, is there a possibility they don't draft a quarterback with all their picks? Sure. But I'm going to lean towards they will. Mm. And you want to give that young player as many weapons as possible.
And so, Breece is one of those.
Absolutely. And if you turn down a 4, you're not getting compensatory picks back in all likelihood because I assume the Jets are going to spend some in free agency. And so that formula probably leads to them not getting much back. And even if they did, Sean, wouldn't it basically be a 4th-round pick?
Essentially, yeah. The formula depends, but yes, let's call it that.
So I'm going to lean towards they prefer to bring him back.
Of course.
And they probably
will.
He's a good player. Yeah. And he's a good player who's going to help whoever they end up drafting, assuming they do draft a young quarterback. 888-808-1019. Ozzie in Woodridge. What's up, Ozzie?
What's up? How you doing?
Wonderful.
Hey, Evan, you piqued my interest on the Dak to the New York Jets idea.
Yes, I mentioned that about 2.5 hours ago. You could rewind on the Odyssey app. Go ahead.
Yeah, 100%. But before we get to that, do we know if AG Aaron Glenn likes to pound back Diet Cokes?
I know. That was a very Francesian answer when he said, I never said that. That's what he said. With
snowblower.
What makes a successful season? And he said, everyone being proud. And then today he's like, everyone being proud didn't mean this season. I just meant in general. I never said that.
Yeah, if he pounds back Diet Cokes, he's married to a Roe. He never said that. And then if that is true, they're brothers from another mother.
Right. Clown. Facts.
But Ev,
yes,
I got an idea and a trade proposal for you, my friend.
All right.
With that brutal loss to the Cardinals, I'm pretty much done with my pitiful Cowboys. Mm. I mean, the only thing that will bring me back in, and this ain't happening, is if they go 3-1 over the next 4, and one of those is a win against the Eagles. But I don't see that happening.
Yeah.
So, I want the Milton era to start right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to trade Dak to you in the offseason. Give me back my 1st-round pick.
No.
Sign Breece and give me him too.
No. No. Because I mentioned Dak's name as a possible veteran quarterback who would be available because I want to give the information. And then I promptly said, no gracias.
Yeah.
I'm not interested. Like,
we got a nice working relationship now. Give me back my 1st.
Ozzie,
you take Dak. I start Milton era.
What I really want to know is how the hell do you feel that you turned an all-time defensive player like Micah Parsons into basically Quinnen Williams and a 1? Like, do you feel good about it or are you depressed? Like, how do you even feel about what the hell was pulled off over the last 6 months?
I told you this in the past. Jerry Jones has mashed potatoes for brains. He's the Joe Biden of GMs and owners. So he know not what he do because he has no idea what he's doing, literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
So when you look at it that way, even with Micah, they couldn't stop a nosebleed in the playoffs getting run all over and thrown all over by the Packers anyway. So, que sera, sera, let's start the Milton era. Let's rock and roll. Give me back my 1st.
You're not getting it back. It's mine.
Right. So the Dak deal, acquired him, would take on $140 million of salary
in
the
next
3 years.
I'm good.
Exactly.
What I mentioned at the top of the show, and you could rewind on the Odyssey app, was with the bounty of picks the Jets have, if a veteran quarterback becomes available that we're not thinking about, the Jets are in a great position to acquire that guy.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned Dak Prescott as a name, but not someone I'd want. Just someone who could become available.
Yeah.
If Joe Burrow became available, I'm interested. If, let's say, C.J. Stroud became available or Justin Herbert became available, I'm interested.
What about Trevor Lawrence?
It's a good question. I thought about him.
Because he's good.
Yeah.
But he's not.
Yeah, I think I would probably roll the dice on my quarterback. I think I would then probably prefer to draft my own and have that guy become a star. Because I think Trevor Lawrence is good, but he's not the franchise-altering quarterback that Maybe we thought he was. You know,
yeah, he's had plenty of opportunities to prove that, and it hasn't happened. And you give him some grace because he's had three coaches, three coaching staffs, and it's only been 5 years.
Yeah.
So that's just hard.
The one thing I've thought about is, so a while ago, Gary Myers was interviewing Jerry Jones, mm-hmm. and Jerry Jones said point blank to Gary, I called the Jets, and I said, I'll give you Micah for a one in Quinnen Williams. Mm-hmm. That's from Jerry Jones. And I remember when I heard that a few months ago, I thought about it, and I was like, I don't know. Knowing what I know now, like, would that have ever made sense for the Jets to have said yes? Because they did turn Quinnen Williams into a one.
Yeah,
but it could have been Quinnen and a one to get Micah Parsons, who's an all-world defensive player. And would that have made a difference on the success of the Jets this season if Parsons was here and Quinnen wasn't?
I doubt it. I don't think the team is good enough.
And thank God they didn't make that trade.
Yeah. I mean, it's a building block, but then you're also having to turn around and pay him right away without having him had Jet success. Obviously, he had Cowboy success,
right.
But he hadn't had Jet success. And it's a risk that if you're a team that's really good, like the Green Bay Packers, or supposedly really good because they lost to the Carolina Panthers somehow last weekend, but you're a team that's really good and on the precipice of being in that top two or three in your conference, you go trade for a guy like Micah Parsons and you pay him because he's accenting what you already have.
Right.
For the Jets, you would be acquiring, signing him to be your foundation. That's different. And that's not worth it, a lot of these things.
And it's certainly not worth it when you're still looking for a franchise quarterback, right. And now you've given away a first-round pick that could help you get there.
Exactly.
Let's go to Andy in New Haven. What's up, Andy?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Happy Black Wednesday, as we call it, I guess, in politics, depending on which side you're on, day after Election Day.
That is true. That is very true. Yes.
My question for you is simple. Taking all of the dirty politics out of it, I want to know who you guys think would be the two best political candidates among the WFAN hosts that would then face off hypothetically to be mayor of New York City. I don't want to skew your thinking, but okay. To be honest, my thought is Giannotti versus Barber.
Hey, it's Tiki Barber. Giannotti versus Tiki.
Interesting.
That's very... So, here's who jumps out at me, and it's not Gio.
Yeah.
I think Al Dukes jumps out at me.
Al Dukes.
Because I'll tell you why.
Because of his thoughtfulness.
I think he's unfiltered, but the right kind of unfiltered.
A nice round ass.
Like, he's going to tell you how he feels, but he's going to do it in such a calm way that I think he'll get under the skin of his opponents.
Yeah.
I think Gio would lose his mind on people.
Yeah, intellectually
but
bankrupt.
Sometimes you need, it's like the balance with politicians of being calming, but also forceful.
Yes.
Most don't have it. Like, it's hard to do that.
It's
really
you.
Well.
It's you and Al Dukes. Like, I'm just saying right now off the top, I don't think anyone else is even close.
Boomer Esiason!
Nah, he's too old now.
What the hell do I know?
BT? Nah. Sal? You want to throw him in there?
Snowblower.
Mike? Well, honestly, if can we include all... You said Mike, so historical WFAN hosts?
Yeah. I think that's fair.
I'm going to get very serious right now because this one could be real. Sid Rosenberg.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, come on. He's already influential in New York City politics.
It feels like he's setting himself up to do that.
And he can.
And he can, and the past doesn't matter.
Exactly. Not anymore. So if we're including all FAN hosts, and Sid, of course, worked here for years... I think he would. I think that one may actually happen. Like in 20, I think Mondaire would run for re-election against Sid Rosenberg.
He'd be fun to debate.
In fact, long-term prediction: we have a new mayor-elect. Uh-huh. That mayor-elect will be sworn in just a few months, and in 4 years, he's going to face a re-election campaign. Now, Curtis Sliwa, he's run a couple of times. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Curtis, it hasn't worked.
Yeah, and he basically got told by Sid, you can't win.
And isn't that perfect?
Right, it was a rocky moment. You can't win.
So my prediction is he will face Sid Rosenberg in the 2020, what year would that be? 2020, it's 2027. What year is it right now?
It'd be 2030 governorship, so the 2029 election.
2029. I was just doing 4 years from now, and I forgot what year it was.
Right. But they take over it. And whatever.
Right, they take over the following year. So if we're including all FA and hosts of all time, jokes aside, I think it actually may be Sid. Mm-hmm. In terms of the people right now, I'd say Al Dukes and Tiki Barber. I think you guys are probably very different in terms of your priorities and policies, but you both have that same calming demeanor as you debate each other.
Hey, it's Tiki Barber.
In fact,
I can yell at you and not know that you're being yelled at.
Dude, that debate would actually be awesome, the more I think about this. Like, we have to find the right issues to have Al Dukes and Tiki Barber debate, and that would be, like, unbelievable. That's the answer. I don't think there's anybody else, with
for
all due respect.
Practice? For practice.
Well, if you guys wanted to run for mayor. I know you're not eligible to, because you both live in Jersey.
Exactly. I mean, somebody's got to run for mayor.
Maybe the governorship. Obviously, we have a new governor in the state of New Jersey, but maybe in 4 years or 8 years, it can be Al Dukes versus Tiki Barber.
Right. Hey, congratulations to my friend Mikey Sherrill, as well as to my friend Abigail Spamberger.
You're friends with both of them?
Well, she's a UVA grad.
Oh, my God. Dude, I found the channel now for politics, because I was getting into the elections last night. I also wanted to know my local returns, how my county did or who won. And I ended up on this thing called News Nation, which I'd never watched before.
I've heard of it, but I've never watched it.
So
what's different about it?
Now, they did have, like, people you've heard of, because what's his name? Cuomo's brother was on it.
Oh, yeah.
And Bill O'Reilly was on it.
Chris, right.
So Chris Cuomo and Bill O'Reilly were, like, the opinionated guys. But overall, they pretty much called it down the middle. And they called the New Jersey governorship race, like, before anybody else.
Right.
Because I texted you guys. I was like, dude, they just called New Jersey already.
Right. Yeah, I was there. I was at Mikey's event. And they didn't call it, but we knew it was over.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
So Mikey Sherrill won, so it was a very happy event. Have you ever been to a political event in which they lost?
I have not, but Tracy went to Hillary's party.
How depressing is that?
It was bad.
Yeah.
It was bad.
I couldn't pull this off to be at a party either. Like, if you win, it's kind of fun. But if you lose, I'd almost want to laugh at everybody. So I probably have to excuse myself.
Yeah, like, Dad had to have been like a Blue Jay fan in game 7.
Yeah. Well,
it's worse than that. Well, think about all the money you spent.
Yeah.
And the grind and the trial. You know, she didn't do enough of that. But whatever. It is like you spend so much effort and time and then you lose.
There is a video, and I was going to cut it and send it to Tommy, but I can't. There's so much language in it. But there's a guy who went to Game 7 Blue Jays against the Dodgers, full Yankee gear, okay? He's sitting in the upper deck. The Blue Jays lose the game. He then proceeds on camera to destroy every Blue Jay fan around him. You guys suck! Oh, my God! How did you lose? And for the first 5 minutes of this video, I'm like, how is no one punching him in the face?
Right. Well, because they're shocked.
I guess they, and finally at the end, someone did attack him.
Right.
But this guy was openly full Yankee regalia.
He's trying to get attacked.
I mean, he was last row of the upper deck in like the left field corner of Rogers Center. And he is just openly mocking the crap out of every Yankee fan. Now, the reason
Blue Jay fan.
Blue Jay fan, because he's a Yankee fan. That would be my urge at any political event that the person lost. And it doesn't even matter if I voted for you or not. Like, I would want to sit there and be like, did you just lose? To that? You lost to that? How much? Wait, hold on. Let me get this straight. How much money did you spend to lose? I wouldn't do it, but I'd want to do it.
Right.
So, there you go. That's a good question, though. Very good question. Do you agree with that answer, Sean?
I do, and I just realized that in 4 years, I'd love nothing more than just to sit back as a non-New York City resident and watch Sid Rosenberg in one of these elections.
Oh, that one. I thought you meant the Al Dukes versus Tiki Barber one.
But I'm so fixated on that now. Sign me up.
Yeah.
Hear the spoilers. I bet
I bet he does it. I bet he tries. I'm serious. Yeah. The crossovers are happening.
You're right.
Stephen A. Smith might run for office at some point, and I'm barely joking.
No, you're right.
Oh, I think he's definitely running for office. I think he's already setting himself up to run for office. Stephen A. Smith also did something very brilliant. So do you guys remember that during the NBA Finals, he was caught playing solitaire? And it was like this big controversy. You don't even take the finals seriously. You're bored playing solitaire.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I'm on Twitter the other day, and a video pops up of Stephen A. Smith playing solitaire. And he's doing a commercial for solitaire saying, this basketball game's getting in the way of my solitaire. And I'm like, damn, this guy took an embarrassing moment and made it this great ad campaign.
That's funny.
I give him credit for that.
That's kind of smart.
Very smart. Let's go to John in St. Louis. What's going on, John?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How are you?
Oh, good.
All right, so I've been on hold for a while. So my first point, I was with you at the open of the show.
I mentioned trading all these picks to the Bengals for Joe Burrow for the Jets to Boomer this morning, and he kind of poo-pooed it. I'm on the exact same page as you, Evan. I think that's a realistic possibility given their financial history and what the Jets can do. But my main point, the Mets point, why wouldn't we make Bregman our main free agent option, permanently move Beatty to first with Alonzo being the priority? You can give Alonzo 70% of first base, have Bregman do the other 30%, and have him on a day off as DH. I think it's a great move.
I think it's a great move. I don't think it's a realistic move because what you're talking about is investing many years and a lot of dollars into two players that you're now adding back to this team in Pete Alonso and Alex Bregman. Yeah. And I don't see them doing that, especially when they're going to prioritize pitching.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. And you know what? We know what the issue was last year. It was pitching. And so this is why the Edwin Diaz deal, which feels like it might get done before. Well, I can't because it's tomorrow, right? But whatever. We would have heard it already. But it feels like it's inevitably he's coming back. But the Pete Alonso thing, we haven't heard anything about. Pete Alonso.
Deeply afraid of what we heard last year, which is they're not giving him a long-term deal. Yeah. And unlike last year, there may be a team willing to. And if a team is willing to, he's gone.
Yes.
Like what happened last year wasn't the Mets coming to their senses.
And that was also the qualifying offer issue.
Correct. They had the he had two things going against him last year, Pete. The qualifying offer and not having a great year.
Yes.
He had a better season. He doesn't have a qualifying offer. It feels like there are more teams in need of a big bat. So we're going to unveil our Met plans coming up in about 10 minutes, 15 minutes or so. And I want Pete Alonso. Spoiler alert, Pete Alonso is one of the guys I'd want to bring back. I'm just no longer convinced they will. I'm just not. Yeah. And the idea of Bregman and Alonso, you're not wrong. Does that make the Mets a really good team? You're great at third base. Alonso DHs more. The DH has been a really awful spot for the Mets since the DH came to the league. That's a great lineup. And the Mets also didn't score enough runs last year, as we talked about plenty. So I'm not even disputing that doesn't make the Mets better. I'm disputing that they'd actually be willing to do that.